such as getting on an airplane to go home to our family. With Congress failing to act on immigration reform and President Obama weighing his options on executive action, the critical question remains, how do we define American, he said. Special thanks to Brian Paras and Liana Lopez for that footage. And that does it for our show. I'll be speaking at the Mark Twain House at Hartford, Connecticut, July 21st, and Martha's Vineyard, Saturday, July 26th at 7 p.m. at the Catherine Cornell Auditorium in Vineyard Haven. Special reception 5 at the Beach Plum Inn in Menemsha. Check our website, democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Produced by Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Dina Guzder. I'm Amy Goodman with Nirmi Chaikh. Thanks for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8 o'clock. Coming up next is Wednesday Morning Talk Radio with our host, Paul Rowland.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the 34th Annual Cathedral Park Jazz Festival, Friday, July 18th to Sunday, July 20th at Cathedral Park in North Portland. The Cathedral Park Jazz Festival, the oldest continual free jazz festival west of the Mississippi River. This year, Friday night will be a blues night featuring the Roseland Hunters, and the rest of the festival features jazz performers Farrell Newton plus Soul 3, the Portland Youth Jazz Orchestra, the Mel Brown Septet, Devin Phillips, and many more. Again, that's the 34th Annual Cathedral Park Jazz Festival, located in Cathedral Park under the St. John's Bridge in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Gazelle Natural Fiber Clothing and Full Circle Resale, featuring women's clothing, jewelry, and accessories with a focus on natural fibers since 1984. Gazelle and Full Circle Resale are both located at the corner of Northeast 41st and Fremont and at gazellenaturalfiberclothing.com.
This KBOO program has also been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Grendel's, a neighborhood coffee house offering organic coffee, sandwiches for breakfast and lunch, and Wi-Fi. Proud to support KBOO, Grendel's is open every day at East Burnside and 8th. Information at 503-595-9550 or facebook.com/Grendel's Coffee House.
It's like the time that this minister in Indiana claimed that the theme song for Mr. Ed, that old television show about the talking horse, if you played the Mr. Ed theme song backwards, it said Satan is the source.
Misinformation. Misinformation.
Taking scissors to play with the black folk down in Florida. Colored pens and for sexing up the. I'm the someone who knew they're not telling pre-September. I lean on in the loop to help them unremember.
I was flying on UA-93. That shadow in the footage, it was probably me. I'm the rumor, I'm the doubt, I'm the lie. But you wouldn't stand near me if you didn't want to die. Everything you know is wrong.
Misinformation.
There's a verse missing out of this song.
Misinformation.
Everything you know is wrong.
Misinformation.
Wrong, 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 wrong.
suffered
Waco
when they
burnt it
to the ground. Without me,
Oklahoma
wasn't
possible.
See
my silhouette
in the Super 8
around the
grassy knoll.
And good morning. You are listening to KBOO Radio. My name is Paul Roland. This is Wednesday Morning Talk Radio. And that was good old Chumbawamba, Everything You Know Is Wrong. I just wanted to let that play. I really like that song. What does it mean? You know, we talk about, listening to coming up after Democracy Now with, it's just, it's numbing almost. I mean, can you imagine living over there in Gaza? Could you imagine living in a place where you're directly being subject to the worst violence that this system can throw upon you? Here, we're kind of removed. We're still sort of in a bubble. We, most of us, obviously, if you watch the, I liked this Cop Block page on Facebook. Anybody out there also get Cop Block on your Facebook? Kind of also almost a little embarrassed to admit that I'm on Facebook, because for years and years I didn't do any of that stuff. But hey. We all have our weaknesses. So anyway, Cop Block is basically a page where people just post all these videos of police misconduct. It's almost all police misconduct. I saw a video the other day where a cop actually picked up little kids and carried them across this flooded street. And it basically the comment was, This is what you should be doing, and not abusing people constantly. But it's just amazing the number of videos that, because people now with these smartphones and stuff, you have a video camera with you at every moment, and so people are making use of them and videotaping encounters with the police of their own, of other people's. Anyway, it's some people, even if they're not living in Gaza or Iraq, especially people of color, people, marginalized people, are subject much more directly than I am, than probably many of you listening are, to the brunt force of the police state or the world military state. Anyway, Cop Block is a good place to go. Go ahead and like that page, and you can too can be inundated constantly with these images of constant police abuse. And I was talking to someone. I was down at the Earth First Rendezvous, just south of the California border, a couple weeks ago, and which was a very good event. Good to get back into the Earth First scene. It was the first national rendezvous I've ever been to, actually, after having been an Earth First activist for many years. Anyway, there's a lot of younger people, much younger than myself, people who are much more into that kind of activism, going, directly up against the police state. And I was asking this this guy, what do you think? I mean, is it just because of the internet that we see so much, that it seems like there's so much more police misconduct? Is it just because it's people are actually videotaping it, is getting out there more? Or is there actually more of it? And he kind of agreed with me that there actually does seem to be more of it. And, there's different ways you can react to these terrible images and news of what's going on day in, day out, oil trains exploding, fracking going on everywhere, continued warfare, this war on terrorism, et cetera, that we talk about quite a bit here on KBOO Community Radio. You know, so, you can kind of just be a news junkie and just sort of like continue to absorb it all. You can shut it off because it's too overwhelming. You can just kind of get numb to it, get angry, lots of different reactions. But in the end, unless we have some way of actually channeling whatever our emotions are, whatever comes up, it tends to lead to anxiety and frustration. So what I want to talk about this morning is this zine that I picked up at the Earth First Round River Rendezvous by the Crime Think Workers Collective. Anybody out there a fan of Crime Think or has read Crime Think and likes some of what they have to say, or perhaps all of it? Well, if you've read this, I'd really like to hear from you. It's called We Are All Very Anxious, Six Theses on Anxiety and Why It Is Effectively Preventing Militancy and One Possible Strategy for Overcoming It. And it's supposedly written by the Institute for Precarious Consciousness. That might actually be an existing institute, or perhaps it's just a fascist name. In any case, that's what I'd like to talk about. The number here is 503-231-8187. And, you know, I've talked about, you know, I've been substituting quite a bit for Lisa Loving in this time slot, which is still an open time slot here on Wednesday Morning Talk Radio. And I've talked about, you know, reform or revolution. I've talked about different angles on, you know, our current situation and how we respond to it, some old questions, some new questions. And, you know, my approach is maybe somewhat different from other political activists' approach. I think we really have to focus much more on our own psyches, and I would say also on our collective psyches. You know, it's not just an automatic thing. You know, you hear about all this stuff and you automatically know how to respond, or you respond. It's like it gets filtered through our being. And, you know, it's like the old question, do you change yourself, or do you change the structures? And I think that's a false dichotomy, as all such dichotomies are. It's basically the, you know, the structures that we live in reinforce, condition us and reinforce our, you know, our mentality, and our mentality conditions the way the structures operate. It's all kind of a dialectical process. But so in this little zine here, this booklet, it's something that might be somewhat controversial. It takes a very it takes a bit more of a psychological approach to the situation and to, you know, how we confront it. And it says basically that each phase of capitalism has its own dominant reactive affect. That means our emotional response, basically. And, you know, this is not a strictly structuralist or materialist analysis. And that appeals to me, because I think there's great limits to a simply structuralist or materialist analysis, many or most Marxists tend to go for, which might also be somewhat of a simplistic thing to say as well. But each phase of capitalism has a particular affect which holds it together. This is not a static situation. The prevalence of a particular dominant affect is sustainable only until strategies of resistance able to break down this particular affect and or its social sources are formulated. Hence, capitalism constantly comes into crisis and recomposes around newly dominant affects. And again, there's, you know, a whole other analysis, which is that there's these structural inherent contradictions within capitalism revolving around the rate of profit, revolving around the tension and conflict between different classes that inherently lead it on to crisis. And that's, you know, not to say that that is not itself also valid, but I think this is a really interesting approach that tends to get ignored a lot. So one aspect of every phase's dominant affect is that it is a public secret, something that everyone knows but nobody admits or talks about. As long as the dominant affect is a public secret, it remains effective and strategies against it will not emerge. Public secrets are typically personalized. The problem is only visible at an individual psychological level. The social causes of the problem are concealed. Each phase blames the system's victims for the suffering that the system causes, and it portrays a fundamental part of its functional logic as a contingent and localized problem. In the modern era, until the post-war settlement, as post-World War II settlement, I believe, that's the settlement, I guess, the Great Compromise with labor, I believe is what they're referring to. The dominant affect was misery. In the 19th century, the dominant narrative was that capitalism leads to general enrichment. The public secret of this narrative was the misery of the working class. The exposure of this misery was carried out by revolutionaries. The first wave of modern social movements in the 19th century was a machine for fighting misery. Tactics such as strikes, wage struggles, political organization, mutual aid, cooperatives, and strike funds were effective ways to defeat the power of misery by ensuring a certain social minimum. Some of these strategies still work when fighting misery. When misery stopped working as a control strategy, which is not to say ever, and they don't say this here, that misery has ever been completely eliminated. In fact, it's coming back with a... redoubled now, but when misery stopped working as a control strategy, capitalism switched to boredom. In the mid-20th century, the dominant public narrative was that the standard of living, which widened access to consumption, healthcare, and education, was rising. Everyone in the rich countries was happy, and the poor countries were on their way to development. That's the dominant myth. The public secret was that everyone was bored. This was an effect of the Fordist system, which was prevalent until the 1980s. A system based on full-time jobs for life, guaranteed welfare, mass consumerism, mass culture, and the co-optation of the labor movement, which had been built to fight misery. Job security and welfare provision reduced anxiety and misery, but jobs were boring, made up of simple, repetitive tasks. Mid-century capitalism gave everything needed for survival, but no opportunities for life. It was a system based on force-feeding survival to saturation point. You know, if you think of the 50s, the organization man, kind of the boredom, which was shaken up by rock and roll and all that. I'll continue reading here. Of course, not all workers under Fordism actually had stable jobs or security, but this was the core model of work around which the larger system was arranged. There were really three deals in this phase, with the B worker deal, boredom for security, being the most exemplary of the Fordism boredom conjuncture. Today, the B worker deal, I guess that's the, in terms of tiers, the second tier worker, which, you know, the classic union factory job, which paid, you know, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 or more a year. Today, the B worker deal has largely been eliminated, leaving a gulf between the A and C workers. The consumer society insiders on the one hand, and the autonomy and insecurity of the most marginal on the other hand. Contemporary resistance is born of the 1960s wave in response to the dominant affect of boredom. If each stage of the dominant system has a dominant affect, then each stage of resistance needs strategies to defeat or dissolve this affect. If the first wave of social movements were a machine for fighting misery, the second wave of the 1960s, 70s, or more broadly and thinly, 1960s to the 90s, were a machine for fighting boredom. This is the wave of which our own movements were born, which continues to inflect most of our theories and practices. And of course, much older people listening to this program, you know, people in the 60s and 70s, a lot of people were still going on those older strategies. You know, again, according to this framework, you know, it's, we can debate its limitations and benefits, but I think it's very interesting. So people in the 67 were still also dealing with the older form. I mean, each one to some extent supplants, but also includes aspects of the older forms of resistance. So Most tactics of this era were our ways to escape the work consumer cycle. The Situationists pioneered a whole series of tactics directed against boredom, declaring that, quote, we do not want a world in which the guarantee that we will not die of starvation is bought by accepting the risk of dying of boredom. Autonomia fought boredom by refusing work, both within work, using sabotage and go slows, and against it, slacking off and dropping out. These protest forms were associated with a wider social process of counterculture exodus from the dominant forms of boring work and boring social roles. Of course, the, you know, the uprising in 1968 evidenced a lot of this. In the feminist movement, the housewife, quote, housewife malaise was theorized as systemic in the 1960s. Later, further dissatisfactions were revealed through consciousness raising, and the texts and actions from, quote, the myth of the vaginal orgasm to the Red Stockings abortion speak out, which stem from it. Similar tendencies can be seen in the theater of the oppressed. Critical pedagogy, the main direct action styles, in parentheses, carnivalesque, militant, and pacifist, and in movements as late as the 1990s, such as the Free Party Movement, Reclaim the Streets, DIY culture, and hacker culture. The mid-century reorientation from misery to boredom was crucial to the emergence of a new wave of revolt. We are the tail end of this wave. Just as the tactics of the first wave still work when fighting misery, so the tactics of the second wave still work when fighting boredom. The difficulty is that we are less often facing boredom as the main enemy. This is why militant resistance is caught in its current impasse. So they're up to stage three now. Capitalism has largely absorbed the struggle against boredom. And I will continue this as we go on. Basically, what they get to is that the third thing that we're facing now, the current phase we're in, is the dominant reactive affect is anxiety. Today's public secret is that everyone is anxious. Anxiety has spread from its previous localized locations, such as sexuality, to the whole of the social field. All forms of intensity, self-expression, emotional connection, immediacy, and enjoyment are now laced with anxiety. It has become the linchpin of subordination. One major part of the social underpinning of anxiety is the multifaceted, omnipresent web of surveillance. So I could continue to read this. Hopefully some people already have some reactions to this. If we don't get any calls, and if you want me to keep reading, I will do that. It's actually very, very worth reading. I think this is one thing we could do some reading groups around. The group, again, is Crime Think. That's CRIMETHINC, and that's crimethink.com. You might be able to get this online. If not, you know, I probably could make copies available for the price of photocopying if you would like. So the number here is 503-231-8187. And if you would like to talk about the six theses on anxiety and why it is effectively preventing militancy and one possible strategy for overcoming it, please give us a call if you have your own thoughts on this. You know, it's very interesting, actually, for me personally. I came back, I was living in Italy for about 14 years and living on this beautiful mountain farm and a very, very peaceful life. Although I did have my own stresses because of my lack of a permanent residency and all kinds of things going on. But so then I came back to the States and kind of my world kind of fell apart there for a while. I had started to get these anxiety attacks. And so I understand what they're talking about. I know that anxiety, like from mild forms to more extreme forms of anxiety and attacks, possibly even leading to manic episodes, that it is very prevalent in the society as well as its other side of depression. And many people are on medications and whether they're the pharmaceutical type or otherwise, many people are self-medicating. Many people, you know, are having to kind of opt out of this kind of high intensity activism because it is very stressful. And so we really do need to deal with this both to be able to get engage people where they're at, and you know, to get more people involved, whether it's fighting against coal trains here in the Pacific Northwest, or the oil trains, or the renewed onslaught on our remaining natural forests here in the Pacific Northwest. Any of these things require, you know, you kind of got to have your stuff together. And it is maybe not for everybody, but everybody needs to be involved on one level or another. So we do have a couple callers already. Joe, you're on the air.
Oh, good morning. Hey, I didn't catch part of your conversation because I was babbling on with your call taker there for quite a while explaining what I was going to talk about. But if this morning slot is partway open sometimes, I have a suggestion to you just to consolidate what I was telling the other fella. Is over at Portland Community Media, which is kind of like KBOO for local cable access TV, there's a guy who does a show called 9/11 Was an Inside Job, and SCADS, and SCADS is an acronym for, it's spelled S-C-A-D-S, which stands for State Crimes Against Democracy. And he covers the whole thing, you know, who was all behind.
Okay, so I take it you don't want to talk about the subject that I put out there, I take it.
Oh, what was your subject you were talking about?
Oh, well, it helps if you actually listen first before you start.
But then when I switched over talking to this guy, I don't know if you switched. What I assume you're talking about is the fact that the powers to be have got the American public and most of the world so manipulated and so beaten down. And you were talking just now when the phone came back on here where I could hear your audio, about how, you know, prescription drugs, non-prescription drugs, and people are self-medicating and so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And the big problem is prescription drugs, by the way. I ought to know because I'm a retired EMT and I've seen thousands of people going off to the hospital over a 35-year career that basically have, prescription interactions. So, the point of it is we're never going to get to the bottom of this whole thing of where the, you know, everything from the coal trains to the oil trains to the Fukushima radiation. I mean, these people are not geniuses that build 4 boiling water reactors right on a known fault line that's been known about for hundreds of years, you know. And we're still getting radiation from that. Listen to the radcast on KBOO Evening News Radio. From about 520 to 530, somewhere in there, they do it. But our background radiations here are reading anywhere from in the low to mid-20s all the way up into the 30s and 40s. And the normal background radiation for this area should be about 7 counts per minute. And we're getting in the 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s. We had one rainfall event here that was 198.
So,
and the EPA alert level for rats per minute, radiation counts per minute,
so we're going kind of far afield here, Joe. But so to get back to your first point, which was this person at Portland Community Media and 9/11. So you're suggesting that we focus on that.
Well, the people that are behind the whole thing, the new Pearl Harbor, that are manipulating all the strings. I knew all of this stuff was a hoax. I mean, back when Obama was running for president the first time, and I saw him walking down the hallway of some college back east. And his entourage, his political campaign entourage, was with him. And I was watching this on C-SPAN, and I heard the C-SPAN announcer say, he was kind of announcing it kind of quietly like a golf match, and he goes, here we see candidate Obama with his political entourage, and his campaign advisor is Zbigniew Brzezinski. And as soon as I saw Zbigniew Brzezinski face and heard his name, I just slammed my hand down on the counter, and I went, damn it. I know we're all being had because this is a great hope and change. No, that's not the case. You know, people, if you believe in this guy, then you'll believe in Nixon was a good guy too, because Zbigniew Brzezinski who's the other guy? Okay. Henry Kissinger.
Okay, Joe. So we're getting far afield here again, but we have a couple more callers, and I get your point. And there are a lot of people who would like to see us focus more specifically I assume obviously you're not just talking about 9/11. You're talking about the overall,
9/11 is right. The key to all right. of the BS that's going on now.
Okay.
When tower number 7 fell, listen okay. to this, just Quinn, I'll make this brief. Towers 1 and 2 were hit by airplanes, okay?
Okay, we have a couple other callers, and you've been on for several minutes. So, most people who listen to this pretty much know the scenario that you're talking about, that there's different, there's questions about the official story. And I think that's all very good to talk about, but we're going a little farther afield from what, I was hoping we could go with here today. But I appreciate your calling, Joe, and we have a couple more callers. John, you're next. Hello?
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
Interesting show. It sounds like the paradigm, it goes from misery to boredom to anxiety. It's the three dominant emotional affects to kind of integrate what the previous caller was talking about with Zbigniew Brzezinski and 9/11, those were, deeply anxiety-promoting events that... So I think that the previous caller's point about 9/11 is actually kind of ties in with what you're talking about, Ben.
Totally. You're right. Exactly, yeah.
And 9/11 led to the security state, right? Where Cheney was saying, okay, we're going to go to the dark side, and we come to find out that the surveillance state is actually... Snowden's revelations are basically that the security state, it's about controlling us. That's what it's about.
Well, that's the solution to generalized anxiety, is that they will take care of it for us.
They would create the anxiety, promote the anxiety, tell us that only they could handle the anxiety for us. Only they could make us safe.
Right.
I do think that one of the things about 9/11, which actually is an important point to make, that and does have to do with anxiety, and I know my own personal experience with having to reconcile what happened on 9/11 is the cognitive dissonance that I personally went through, and having to finally come to the point of having to acknowledge inside of myself, what did I actually believe happened? And after having watched documentary after documentary, I finally came to my own personal conviction that there was just simply no way that our government hadn't been involved in bringing down the towers themselves. And I know, our audience probably knows this already, as you've been mentioning about. But my point about it is that that's an incredibly anxiety-producing kind of place to actually arrive at, because at that point you step outside of the dominant paradigm in order to be true to your own perceptions. Honestly, it produces anxiety in me. I know what I believe to be true, but then when you speak to folks who aren't like news junkies like I am, I totally understand. If you say it's basically like seeing a dysfunctional family, and if you stand outside of a dysfunctional family and you can see its abusive dynamics, and if you were to say to somebody inside of that dysfunctional family, "Boy, that's screwed up," they'll want to attack you because it's the system of which they are a part. And am I making sense as far as all that goes? Because it's funny that you bring all of this up, because certainly I agree with you that anxiety is the predominant emotional state. I personally experience that. I feel like I see it every day. And I feel like that there's, I think the things that you've mentioned, like self-medication and all, there's self-medication, there are how many people on antidepressants, they're always pumping out new antidepressants. And if you go to a doctor and they'll just whip out their prescription pad, right? So we're playing with our basic biological natures rather than actually dealing with the environmental factors that produce the anxiety to begin with.
It's true, true. So,
yeah,
John,
we
have a couple more callers.
Absolutely. Thank you for your time.
Okay, thank you. And, I had tried to sort of head off a little bit going too deep into this 9/11. It's interesting that came up, because obviously, the post-9/11 period, the anxiety created by that, the war on terror, the, you know, this whole national security state has been amped up. Obviously, that speaks directly to what I brought up, but I was trying to approach it more on a kind of our personal emotional affect side and how we deal with that. And what this booklet gets into are the need for developing affinity groups, so we're not alone with our anxiety, and we can gain perspective, which again is I could read more from this, but we do have a couple callers. But I do want to say one thing, because I've had this 9/11 conversation a lot, because I missed 9/11. I was in Italy, and so I missed that, you know, that fundamental event of our times. And its aftermath, frankly. I mean, I very indirectly, everybody in the world kind of got caught up in it, but I wasn't here. So I'm kind of having to catch up, and I'll never catch up because I just didn't live through it. But with that said, I have had a lot of conversations. And basically, you know, I don't want to really talk more specifically about this, but, you know, the point I've come to is that it to me, it's not, you know, and this is more, I don't know, it's not like, The actual exact truth of the matter is not as important to me as like what actually came about afterwards. And what I basically say is that my basic belief is that it seems very likely that the United States power structure, you know, the people who are like in the most controlling positions in this hierarchy, in the national security apparatus, allowed this to happen, allowed those planes to go in, because it just seems so obvious that there was so much information already out there. I know that, I forget the journalist who's working with Snowden. Steve, help me out here. Greenwald, yeah. Greenwald's Glenn Greenwald was speaking. I heard him on KBOO the other day and was saying that is the fact that there's just too much information that they couldn't, they're just swimming in too much information and they didn't have the analytical capability. I don't quite buy that. I think there's a lot of indications that there actually was knowledge that was suppressed. And so, I mean, that's basically my take. And all the other things, the putting explosives in the building, all that, I can perfectly believe that I believe that this government is capable of doing such things. It's been demonstrated to do such, quote, false flag operations in the past or inventing them, you know, to cynically, you know, Machiavellian use of power. It's nothing new. But it just seems like we're never all good. Enough of us are not going to get on the same page with those scenarios of actually putting explosives in these buildings. You know, Building 7, I'm more willing to entertain that. But anyway, you know, I just don't think it's as important as us all agreeing that whatever happened, it was whether it was allowed to happen, whether they actually planted explosives themselves. The end result was an amping up of this national security state, the war on terror, which totally played into the hands of empire. And so that's what we should be focusing on. And I just think it's going to continue to divide us if we continue to continue to have conflicts and tensions over exactly what happened. I think we need to some extent, leave that behind. That's my personal opinion. And so I'd like to leave that 9/11 issue to rest, except as it bears upon this issue of the dominant form of anxiety and how we deal with it. And I would, before we go to our next callers, I would like to tell you what's coming up this morning on KBOO. At 9, we'll hear Economic Update with host Richard Wolff. He speaks with Tom Zgoros, author of Checking the Banks, The Nuts and Bolts of Banking for People Who Want to Fix It. At 10, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadi with headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15 on Flashpoints, journalist and author Vijay Prashad discusses the Israeli-Egyptian ceasefire fake out and the real politics behind the latest U.S.-supported Israeli bombing in Gaza. Also more on the corporate media's pro-Israeli supporting. And at 11 on the Food Show, Paul Greenberg talks about his book, American Catch, The Fight for Our Local Seafood. And thank you all for listening to us here on KBOO. And thank those of you who are KBOO members for your financial support. And if you are not yet a KBOO member, you too can become one by going to kboo.fm and you can click on Donate Today. And my name is Paul Rowland. You are listening to KBOO Community Radio. And I'm talking about a pamphlet by Crime Think Workers Collective. Well, actually, they say it's an afterword from the Crime Think Workers Collective, and it's actually written by the Institute for Precarious Consciousness. And I don't know who they are, but of course, on the back of the pamphlet, it says crimethink.com, which makes me think they are the ones behind this. It is called We Are All Very Anxious, Six Theses on Anxiety and Why It Is Effectively Preventing Militancy and One Possible Strategy for Overcoming It. And Joanne did call in asking for a copy of this zine. And so she says she can come in and pick up a hard copy. So I guess I will make that same offer available to other people. But of course, I will need a little bit of money. It seems like it'll cost, let's see, it's 4 pages double-sided. So that's 8 times, let's say 10, let's say $1. Good deal. I got it for $2 at the zine. Actually, I didn't get this at the Earth First Thing. I got this at the zine convention they had here in Portland. So we do have 3 callers. Better go to them right now. Boris, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
Fascinating and very relevant conversation. I really like the fact that you pushed the envelope a bit further beyond what most of the KBOO producers are inclined to do, and I would like to see you get a slot of your own at some point. I don't know if you're interested in doing that or not, but at any rate, to get back to the conversation, and the anxiety that you're talking about, what a perfect tool for the power structure to maintain, you know, their nefarious purpose, whatever it might be. I mean, to keep people on the edge of sanity is very productive for control. I mean, it works so perfectly. And I've had conversations about this thing with people. And I think the most critical element here is to just think about trying to create an atmosphere where you can have intelligent conversation. And I'm very interested in your idea of a reading group based around this Crime Think publication. I'm familiar with Crime Think basically from their anarchist manifesto that they came out with quite a few years ago now, I guess. Have you seen that?
I don't think I've actually read that one, but I've read a bunch of their stuff.
But I think this particular paper that you're referring to is would be a productive starting point for, again, what I think is important, intelligent conversation. And just a brief note on 9/11, that's the biggest issue that I run into. You know, I won't get into my own personal feelings about it, but it's almost impossible to have intelligent conversation about what happened on that day because of the fact that the power structure has so effectively created this mass shock factor. I mean, even Naomi Klein in her book, you know, The Shock Doctrine, kind of shied away from talking about 9/11 very much because, you know, it's a real sword over your head if you're trying to sell books or something if you talk about it because of what the power structure has done with the idea of conspiracy and all that kind of stuff. And the general public basically has swallowed it all. So here we are in this state of affairs where we can't even have intelligent conversation about.
Well, I think that's an overgeneralized state. I think that's maybe overgeneralizing, say that the general public has swallowed it all. I mean, I think it's a little more complex than that, but I think your points are well taken, and I appreciate your calling. And we do have a couple more callers and only 15 minutes left. So thank you for calling, Boris. And we've got Harry. You're on the air.
Good morning, and thank you for taking my call. And thank you for playing that song all the way through at the beginning of your show.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering if you could do that more often. Play the whole song all the way through before you start your show.
Okay.
Next is I'm glad you brought up this conversation about anxiety and the news media. Most of us, at least as older as I am, we trusted the news media as to bring us unfiltered or unbiased news. But after 9/11, it was like after the Patriot Act and a few other amendments that the government passed, the government has taken over the media, and we're kind of controlled on even on what they say. When Diane Sawyer reads to us, that script is highly censored by the government, and everyone says the same thing. And
or self censorship, which is maybe more insidious. Yeah.
Yes, and after 9/11, I mean, come on, two planes, three buildings. The building number 7, they still have to, and it's like controlled demolition. The buildings went straight down, and most people see that, but the media won't talk about it.
Okay, well, I did say I wanted to kind of veer away from continuing to talk about 9/11.
But the aftermath was the Patriot Act. And
Homeland Security, and yeah.
Oh, and Homeland Security and all these things, they co-opted the media. But the main issue is, what do we tell our children and our grandchildren? Not to believe everything you hear on the news. Well, that's a start, but either we can participate or we can be watchers and viewers. I don't know what else to say.
All right. Well, thank you for saying that. Appreciate you calling in.
Okay, goodbye.
Goodbye. We got a couple more callers. And before we go to our next caller, this is a very rich, it's only 8 pages, but it's very rich. And it gets to the saying that current tactics and theories aren't working. We need new tactics and theories to combat anxiety. And again, every one of these points that they make is going to raise lots of contention to those who even want to engage with it. But I think it's worth taking seriously, because I think it's clear that it's not just due to the overwhelming force of the powerful elites and structural inequalities that are working against us. It's also on our part, we are not able to get together, and we're not able to overcome our own personal limitations. And among those limitations are, as they say, anxiety and other personal, I don't want to say dysfunctionalities, because that kind of puts the focus on us, when I really do believe that these things are coming from the social milieu that we are living in, that we are not causing our own anxiety, depression, or whatever it may be. But we do need to deal with them. And we don't need to just deal with them to become more functional economic units. That is what the system would like to have us do. We need to actually dismantle this dysfunctional economic milieu that we live in. So anyway, during periods of mobilization and effective social change, people feel a sense of empowerment, the ability to express themselves, a sense of authenticity, and de-repression, no longer being repressed, or disalienation, which can act as an effective treatment for depression and psychological problems. I'm reading again from this We Are All Very Anxious pamphlet from Crime Think. Can act as an effective treatment for depression and psychological problems, a kind of peak experience. It is what sustains political activity. Such experiences have become far rarer in recent years. And I really feel this myself on a personal level and looking around me. We might here focus on two related developments, preemption and punishment by process. Preemptive tactics are those which stop protests before they start, or before they can achieve anything. Kettling, mass arrests, stop and search, lockdowns, house raids, and preemptive arrests are example of these kind of tactics. Punishment by process entails keeping people in a situation of fear, pain, or vulnerability through the abuse of procedures designed for other purposes, such as keeping people on pre-charge or pre-trial bail conditions, which disrupt their everyday activity, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We only have 10 minutes left, and I can't obviously read this whole thing. I really do believe it's worth reading. There are many things that are worth reading. This isn't the only one. I would never say that. But this really struck me such that I felt it was what I wanted to talk to on talk to you on this talk radio show. But we do have two more callers. Phil, you're on the air.
Oh.
Yes, hello.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm getting some kind of feedback here, but I'm calling to speak to directly to what this material you're talking about this morning.
Mm-hmm.
But I would like to put out first, real quickly, everybody that's listening, interested right now, go to underminers, like underminers, like someone undermining, .org. 300 and some pages, very interesting read about where we're at right now. The second thing is on the topic, and I'll be the first one to go to the topic. Sandra Enders, E-N-D-E-R-S, and it's her theory on scapegoat. There's actually a thing called scapegoatism, scapegoat theory, and she starts out with the individual versus individual, and then goes to group. And then goes to larger groups like in society, like Occupy, and like, any group that would be scapegoated. And it puts it in a more, it's purely psychological, she's a psychologist, but it gives very good, this PDF file has diagrams that show the interaction starting at the top and how it works down either through a personal contact and out into other people, like say at work, somebody messes, your boss messes with you, and you take out your frustration. She uses the word frustration instead of anxiety, but the two things obviously are interchangeable.
Yeah, in fact, some of the most interesting points are where they talk about frustration in the zine. So that was Sandra Enders, E-N-D-E-R-S, is that right?
Yes, and scapegoat theory.
Okay.
And it's a PDF file, so it's really nice, you know, to be able to read through it. And I suggest everyone try to put everything in a PDF file. I'm not online, so I download files and open them later, you know, save them and open them later, so... But anyways, it's for you yourself, since you seem to be interested in this. You know, I'll read the. I'm an anarchist. So I'm going to read the material that you put out. The manifesto that the person brought up, that called in. Personally, I'm a little let down by it. Being an anarchist myself, it's a little too. There's too much of this. Metaphysical kind of stuff going on, and these diversions into 9/11 and things like that. It just shows how we need to really learn to focus and think about what's going on. And I've been reading this PDF file on scapegoat, and at the same time I've been reading some old Karl Marx on labor, and it's just fascinating how far away from radical politics we've gotten, how immersed in metaphysical kind of nonsense or distraction. And so it really goes to the core of what these two different articles that we're both speaking about, I think.
Okay. Well, great. Well, thank you very much for calling. And we have another caller. Before that caller, I just want to, since we're mentioning a text to read, but again, you know, this, what we are all very anxious really points to is the need to get together in affinity groups, where they specifically, well, I'll read this paragraph a second, but I want to refer to Get Up, Stand Up, Uniting Populace, Energizing the Defeated, and Battling the Corporate Elite by Bruce Levine. And I had him on the air, maybe a year ago now. He's a psychologist, and this really speaks to also what we're talking about. Get Up, Stand Up by Bruce Levine, L-E-V-I-N-E. So we only have 5 minutes left. I just want to read this. The goal is to produce the click, the moment at which the structural source of problems suddenly makes sense in relation to experiences. This click is which focuses and transforms anger. Greater understanding may in turn relieve psychological pressures and make it easier to respond with anger instead of depression or anxiety. It might even be possible to encourage people into such groups by promoting them as a form of self-help, even though they reject the adjustment orientation of therapeutic and self-esteem building processes. This is fundamental. The result is a kind of affinity group, but oriented to perspective and analysis rather than action. It should be widely recognized, however, that this new awareness needs to turn into some kind of action. Otherwise, it is just frustratingly introspective. And again, this goes on. This is We Are All Very Anxious, 6 Theses on Anxiety and Why It Is Effectively Preventing Militancy and One Possible Strategy for Overcoming It by Crime Think Workers Collective. And I can make this available to people. The number at the front desk is 503-231-8032, or you can call before 9 at 503-231-8187. We have one more caller. John, you're on the air.
Oh, hi. I think it really comes down to really technology and an advancement. I was listening to this one guy talk about the NSA and how they have everybody's number. And I think the anxiety is going to be more compound when they start using drones here in the United States. When people start seeing these things going all around, up and down the freeway, or even in your neighborhood, a lot of people are going to say, well, they're going to throw in the towel. Because they know that's the ultimate harness, the ultimate ball and chain. And that's where the anxiety, I mean, it's compounded by, you know, medical and mechanical, you know, advancements. But when it gets down to, you know, the street level, like the militarization of police, and, you know, right now probably our calls are probably being monitored by some satellite and going right down to Langley, Virginia. But that's how I see a lot of people try to get together. They know that it's going to be really disorganized. That's what I'm trying to say, because they know that the hand has already been dealt with technology.
Okay.
That's all I have to say, because then it's getting more advanced and more repressive.
Okay. Well, but don't give up.
Oh, well, I know. Consciously, I can't. They can't read your mind yet.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for calling. I'm going to read one more paragraph before we go out here. And thank you, the rest of you.
Okay. Well, sorry for being so depressing.
No problem. Yeah. I mean, you know, I think the point of reading this and getting together to talk about it is so that we're not all alone in our perspective. So let me just read one more paragraph or two. This strategy will help our practice in a number of ways. Firstly, these groups can provide a pool of potential accomplices. Secondly, they can prime people for future moments of revolt. Thirdly, they create the potential to shift the general field of so-called public opinion in ways which create an easier context for action. Groups would also function as a life support system, as a space to step back from immersion in the present. They would provide a kind of fluency in radical and dissident concepts which people lack today. Anxiety is reinforced by the fact that it is never clear what, quote, the market wants from us, that the demand for conformity is connected to a vague set of criteria which cannot be established in advance. Even the most conformist people are disposable nowadays as new technologies of management or production are introduced. One of the functions of small group discussions and consciousness raising is to construct a perspective from which one can interpret the situation, and it goes on. And we are about out of time. Again, We Are All Very Anxious is the name of this pamphlet. If you want to talk to me more about it, you can contact me at, I think I have a KBOO email address. But anyway, call up the front desk afterwards and we can talk. Thank you very much, Steve, for engineering. Thanks, everybody, for listening. My name is Paul. Keep listening to KBOO.
In the canteen down at Columbine, with the
bags they never
found, striking matches up at
Waco
when they
burnt it
to the ground.
impossible. See my silhouette
in the Super 8
and run
grassy knoll.
KABU wants you. Yes, you. Are you excited about the new possibilities for local independent media? Are you ready to help KABU reach out and grow stronger in the community? We're looking for candidates for KABU's board of directors, and we've extended our search through July 31st. So if you'd like to share your skills with the people who share your values, download a copy of our board candidate package at kboo.fm. Or you can pick up a copy at the station during business hours. We're located at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. Applications must be received by 5 p.m. July 31st, so don't delay. And we look forward to seeing more of you at KABU.
We're now approaching Newport, Rhode Island.
KABU and the Clinton Street Theater are proud to present one of the great concert films of all time, Jazz on a Summer's Day, a documentary of the 1958 Newport Jazz Festival. Jazz on a Summer's Day captures the music, the crowd, and the essence of such jazz greats as Louis Armstrong, Thelonious Monk, Jerry Mulligan, and Anita O'Day. Jazz on a Summer's Day, Thursday, August 14, 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street, Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm